heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
We join you back here for the second part of our series here. Is the American melting pot coming to an end? Pretty ominous question here, but if you look ahead to even 2050, the signs and the danger is there. I mean, and you know, we're seeing a lot of this. I mean, we're hearing a lot of different reports, but are we really paying attention? And I would suggest to you we're not paying attention. So when we put a question like that out there, is the American melting pot coming to an end? What does that really mean? There's a lot lost on us with American society and our culture itself, because we are a melting pot, because to become an American is sort of like an ethnic mutt. It's like we all have a little bit of everything in us. You know, we talked about that in the first segment. And that's what makes America interesting. It's an interesting experiment, I always say to you. And it's a classic here. I mean, because it's the one place, it's the one country where you can really legitimately become an American, even though you weren't born here. You can't say that about a lot of other places, people. And that makes us a very special, unique culture. Really, I think in the whole history of nations, I call it like just beyond the teenage stage, kind of where we've just gone through puberty. And I look at that as America because we still are a very young country. I mean, historically, in comparison and contrast to a lot of the countries we talked about in the opening sequence of events on this series, I mean, America would be just an infant. I mean, at 200 and almost 44 years old, that makes us pretty young in the scope of things. But what does that mean ahead here as we look at our cultural melting pot and we see where we're at? We get into the fertility rate. We talked about in order to keep any society surviving, and not just surviving, but hopefully thriving. And if it's going to thrive, it's got to be that magic number we threw at you there, 2.11. Now, as our panel discussed, kind of hard to have a 0.11 kid. So you round that up to 3, basically, so that you're not just replacing yourself as the man and the woman, but that you're giving birth to other possibilities of a generation. You know, I try to contrast some of that in my mind with the fact that I hear a lot of things in the past couple of years about depopulation. And I hear a lot of that from the globalists about depopulating the world. And you think, what does that really mean? There are people out there who legitimately want to depopulate. And that becomes a whole nother conversation, but it plays into this a bit. Because if you've got that going on and you've got people, powerful people, by the way, with that belief system, and you compare and contrast it to, you know, what we're doing to try to get our culture to survive. I mean, if 2.11 is what we need, and we shared all those numbers with you in the first show there, the first program on this series here, it's there's some striking numbers in there, people. I mean, none of the countries in Europe would be above that. We're not above that in America here. We're well below that. I mean, I gave you some of Russia's 1.3, just to recap that. Spain, 1.2. You know, Denmark, 1.7. Italy, 1.3. And Canada, 1.6. And here in America, 1.74. So, and again, that means we're all doomed, basically, to extinction at some point. But let's keep it going. Let's talk what that really means. When you step back and you look where we'll be in 2050, there are those who believe that white Americans will be the minority that by 2050. So that's just a short hop away here, people. Many of you listening will still be here. And the white majority in the U.S. will disappear forever, is what people are saying. Now, a lot of people will argue this and debate that it will never happen, but it will happen. And we're already well on the way there. I want to talk to that to you today again here with our special panel. Let me introduce and tell you who they are again. IQ Al-Razouli joins us. He's an Iraqi exile, Arabic speaker, scholar, author, weekly columnist. And here's a piece that he wrote, very thought-provoking piece, by the way. It was entitled Demographic Triumph of Islam Over Christianity. And it's an eye-opening piece, but it gets into a lot of different points about the fertility rate, but also about the Muslim Islam culture and what is happening around the world in regards to that, compare and contrast to what we're doing in all these other countries. It's an eye-opening article for sure, people. Also joining us on the panel is Ava Armstrong. Ava's a political commentator, radio personality here. She's a best-selling author. Her books are on Amazon and in the America Out Loud bookstore. And Dr. Brooke Plettner joins us. Dr. Brooke Plettner holds advanced degrees in aerospace engineering and business administration. He is, again, these are all thinkers today, IQ, Ava, and Brooke, all thinkers. That's what it takes to have this kind of a conversation. You've got to have people who can think outside of that proverbial box, and all three of these people do exactly that. Brooke is a weekly writer here, and he's got a new show coming up on the platform as well, Choose to be Free. So I want to start and bring the conversation back with IQ a moment here. And IQ, in this piece you wrote here, and let's get right to it. And you talk about why Islam is the fastest growing. And it's a major point in your article here, your op-ed that you put out there. And so let's start there, because if we've done our homework right now, IQ, we've told our listening audience that we're all declining here in America, and all these countries in Western civilization are declining. We're going to have problems keeping our ethnicity, our culture in play. I mean, we're losing ground here in a big way. And yet this is the one culture that is growing at an alarming rate. Tell us more about that.
The most important thing that I have to reveal to Americans, although it sounds outrageous, but it isn't, is that Islam and Muslims are prohibited by their Sharia from ever assimilating or integrating among non-Muslims called kuffar, infidels. This is extremely important that Americans and Europeans understand. Unfortunately, our leaders don't seem to understand anything about that. Now,
well, let's stop there a minute. The reason they don't understand, this is an important point what you start with. The reason nobody understands that is because the culture has poisoned it all, IQ, and people believe that it's very discriminatory. And how do I say to you, this is what has happened to our culture. It's very un-American to think that way. What do you say back to that?
No, it means they are very stupid, politically correct dimwits, not to speak about reality. Look, what I'm saying to you is mandated in Muhammad's Quran. I'm not creating it. There are 106 verses in the Quran that prohibited not only attack the kuffar, which are the majority of non-Muslims. By the way, non-Muslims are 80% of current humanity. 80% of humanity are called kuffar. 80% of humanity, the kuffar, are considered by Islam as inferior human beings. Don't take my word for it. Google it. Now, everybody is talking about Islam, and the Muslims are proud of it, that they are the fastest growing religion, they call it religion, in the world. It's not a religion, it's a cult belief system. But let's look at the reality.
You're calling it a cult belief system?
Yeah, it's not a religion. Their God, Allah, is not the God of the Bible. It doesn't matter how many times they speak about it. By the way, one of their deceptions is, in the Quran, the word Allah is mentioned. What do they do when they translate European languages? God. No. Allah is the name of a God. Allah is not God. In Arabic, Ilah, Ilah, I-L-A-H, Google it, means God. Allah is the name of a God. That's why the Shahada, which Muslims shout about all the time that they are Muslims, Shahada says, La ilah illallah wa Muhammad Rasulullah, means no God, ilah, only Allah. That means Allah is the name of the ilah. And Muhammad is Rasulullah, means Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. Yet they twist it, and millions, hundreds of millions of people fall for it. But that's besides the point. Muslims are allowed to build mosques in Western countries, but they forbid the building of churches in theirs. Two, they are allowed to evangelize in the West, but Christians are forbidden upon pain of death from converting Muslims to Christianity. Three, any Muslim who converts out of Islam is murdered for apostasy. Four, Muslims are literally allowed to use our liberal justice system to undermine it and undermine us with it. Six, most important of all, Muslims cannot and will not ever assimilate or integrate among our kuffar infidels, non-Muslims. Another item, which is completely dismissed, Muslim men can marry up to four wives, and many of them would have at least four children per wife. Another, what is utterly insane is the reality that many of the European governments and even in the United States of America are allowing Islamic polygamy, which they prohibit upon others who are not Muslim.
They have no tolerance, you're saying, IQ. There's no tolerance at all there in that culture. And you've called it a cult belief system. It's not a religion. Now, what they preach to the populace is that they are religion, and they've got everybody confused with that point. Also, the point of Allah and God, which you continue to point that out. But I think the tolerance is a really big point, which is what you've just talked about, like the churches and the mosque and the fact that you can't do certain things. But yet what they've done is they've used this this information against the West, because they use it as a, our leaders and our political leaders here, IQ, they point out all the time that we're not being proper, we're not being American, or we're being racist, again, that word, which is such an ugly word that they have politicized and weaponized that word so badly. But yet we have all the tolerance in the world. So what's happening is here is our tolerance is going to be our undoing, is it not?
Absolutely. It's called stealth jihad. By the way, the most intolerant belief system ever in the history of humanity is Islam, contrary to what anybody believes in. Islam is the most intolerant belief system that has ever existed in human history. And I challenge any human being to find any verse in the Torah or the Hebrew Bible or any verse in New Testament inciting either the Christians or the Israelites or the Jews to slaughter others who are not like them. Doesn't exist. But in Islam, it's hundreds of thousands of verses between Muhammad's Quran and the Hadith.
So, IQ, why do you think the leaders here in, as we say, our Western leaders, and certainly here in America, why the denial that has taken place here? I mean, this is a serious question. Is it ignorance? Is it just plain out? I mean, is it stupidity? I mean, is it what? Is it? Do they have some other motive involved? Do they not see the danger? What is it? What's the reason?
I swear to you, I'll pay $1 million for somebody to explain it to me. I can't figure it out. Why would any leader knowingly allow Muslims to come who would destroy their future generations? I have no idea. I've tried to figure it out intellectually, from political point of view, from theological point. I can't figure it out. I'm sorry. I can't.
Yeah. Well, because there's no logic there. The reason you're having trouble figuring it out is there's a lack of logic. That it's hard to explain this when it's pretty clear and it's pretty out there. And this tolerance thing is, I think, a big deal. What's happening is it's a one-way street. And that one-way street is that, you see, they want all the rights and they want you to be tolerant for their system and their belief system. But yet on the flip side of that, there is absolutely zero tolerance and zero flexibility whatsoever, and that's where it is. But now, why? All right, so if they're 20%, IQ, as you're suggesting, you're saying they're about 20% of the population, right? Is that correct, that statement?
Of the world population, 1.5 billion.
Right, of the world population, we're talking, they're about 20% still, correct?
Correct.
All right, so and in Europe, you're dealing with, I think you said on the first episode, you said
about 11%.
Yeah, you said somewhere between 10-15%, varies between country to country.
Yeah.
And in America here, you guessed that it could be as much as 3%, you thought.
Correct.
Okay, so we're a little further well behind the curve. But let's talk about that vacuum there. What's happening? So the fact that in America now, we have several things that are happening here that, you know, I talk about population. Our birth rate is dropping here. We'll talk about that momentarily here. And we see that the majority minority is shifting here. And this is all factual. I mean, there are a lot of studies that are done on this. So who's making up the difference? Is it the Muslim population is making up the difference?
No. In most of the people who are coming to America who are not Muslim will integrate and will assimilate, whether they come from any 130 other nations on earth which are not Islamic.
Right.
Because Islam for 1400 years had only one purpose in life and continues. It's to dominate the whole of humanity with Sharia. And tell Sharia mandates either we non-Muslims submit to it or are exterminated. There are no two other choices, only these two choices, one or the other. And yeah. Our leaders are blind to it.
Yeah, well, they are blind to it, obviously. And I don't know what wakes these people up. I have no idea. It's a quandary. I don't get the logic either. And every time we have these conversations, what seems to be very clear and obvious to many of us is not so clear and obvious to these people. You know, and you see where we're at now and you think, well, we've got some problems in the world. Yeah, okay, great. And, you know, we have other things that are happening. And all the challenges, we talk about a pandemic that's happening or other challenges. I mean, these things will come and go. Problems like this and wars will come and go and pandemics and viruses will come and go. And, leaders will rise and leaders will fall. But what we're talking about right now is the survival of the human race. So we're talking about the survival of what it means to be here in this country, an American. And that's kind of what should not be lost on anybody. So this conversation really supersedes all of it. I mean, it really blows everything else out of the water. It really doesn't matter, because if we're not here to put up the good fight, then what is left? You know, I wonder what if I wish we could look ahead 50 years and look back and see if we fixed any of this. If somebody could hear my voice 50 years out and say, did we fix any of this? Did we account for anything that happened here? And I think that's what I want to ask the panel when we get back in a moment, is how do we fix this? Number one. Number two, looking forward, will we look back and realize that somehow we were able to grab on to the moment? We were able to adjust for what we're speaking about here. We'll continue on with the Voice of the Nation. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio. The American melting pot coming to an end as we look forward to even now to 2050 just ahead here. And we're talking about the various problems and the issues that we're challenged with. But one of the biggest things is that we can't seem to get the leadership to understand the gravity of this situation. It's hard to, come up with a final conclusion that says, here's the answer, here's the path forward, here's what we need to do. And really, Baruch, let me get you to weigh in here. It's because I think a lot of people are in denial.
It's not a matter of denial. This is a matter of using Islam as a weapon, one of the primary weapons against America. Because Islam and America are diametric opposites. As IQ knows better than I do, Islam in Arabic means submission. In other words, submission to the will of Allah and to Sharia law. And the whole concept behind America, it's in a column that I just wrote this morning, the whole concept of America is non-submission, or in other words, non-compliance. So America was, the big idea behind America was, I will not comply. I will not comply with some edicts by the English Parliament in London. I will not comply sometimes with the edicts of my own government, like that hair salon owner in, I believe, Texas, that opened up, even though
that's right.
You know, the ordinance was that she couldn't. In other words, the idea of America is non-submission, is non-compliance. That's the big idea of America. The big idea of Islam, by its very name, is submission and compliance. And what the globalists, including the American globalists, Obamas, Bushes, Clintons, you name them, what they want is they want submission. And when you have people who submit to Islam, they will submit to anything else. I mean, think about it. As a human being, this is very 0-1. This is a very digital proposition. You either submit as your default choice or you don't. I know for myself, just as me, even in the Soviet Union, I would never submit. I don't like to submit. I mean, I don't care what it is, but if you tell me that it has to be so, I'm going to tell you to F off. That's just my default kind of thing. I will not submit. When you submit to Islam, now you're open to submitting to anything and everything. And that's why our leaders, our globalist leaders, are bringing more and more Muslims. And they love the Sharia law, and they're letting them run rampant and do whatever the hell they want, is because they want them to teach the rest of Americans the art of submission. The most anti-American idea that has ever been and ever will be, they want to introduce it to America, and they want to, as Obama so eloquently said, remake America into something totally different, which means into a country of people who submit. And that's what it is.
Well, I got to tell you what, Baruch, I can't thank you enough for what you just said and that explanation. Boy, that is perfect, what you just put out there. I will not comply. The submission. Now I'm getting the sense now of this whole submission conversation and how that blends in. And that really opens my eyes up. Let me get Ava. Ava, that is, I think the whole idea, I mean, I totally get it as an American. And I get what Baruch is saying when he says, I will not comply, submission. And then you see what's going on here, why we're having all the patriots rise up, Ava, and you're seeing it from sea to sea here. People are rising up, and they will not comply. So they want them to submit to the local leaders, to their edicts. And I love the way that Baruch says, hey, wait a minute. We didn't like the edicts coming from England either, which is how this whole thing got started in America. Boy, that brings it back front and center, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very interesting that the two gentlemen that we have on this show today are not born in America, and they're looking kind of from the outside in, and they're seeing things and making points that are extremely important. Being an American myself, I never quite looked at that in that way. So yes, I will not submit either.
You know, Ava, that's great. Listen, what you just said is important. It's because America is an idea. You're right. You agree. It's an idea. It's a theory. It's
yes.
A thought. It's an idea. And that idea, and that's why you're saying, like, people like IQ and people like Baruch are, I mean, these are also patriots. I would call them patriots, Ava. Do you see what I mean by that?
I do. 100%. And, you know, in the past, our immigration has been assimilated. All of our immigrants came from all over the world. Many, many of them assimilated, and they spoke English. They were very proud to learn English and join our culture. They were very proud to also follow our laws in this country. And the greatest thing of all, they were very excited to be involved in capitalism, because that's the only way that you can rise above and become, you know, much, much better off. So freedom allows all these things. But without that freedom, you won't have America. It won't be there.
Ava, let's talk about this graph and chart that I think it's important to tell people. I had made the reference earlier in the program about by 2050, potentially, the white American will be the minority. Now, just making that statement, sometimes people will say, well, so what's wrong with that? What's your point? So let me throw that at you a moment, because I want to talk about that. Maybe describe from the Center for Immigration Studies what they suggest is going to happen between now and really we're only talking 30 years, Ava, 30 years in 2050, right?
Yes. There will be more minority people that will actually become the majority, basically. It's as simple as that. And we're just importing more people than we're giving birth to. And the people that we're importing are giving birth at great numbers. So you have, you know, say Muslim immigrants, or you have Latino immigrants. These people make big families, and, you know, that's part of their culture.
Here's the argument I want to give back, though. But if these people assimilate with the American culture, and if the American melting pot is a melting pot, why do we care?
Well, we care when people do not follow our legal system, for one thing. I mean, if you're going to follow Sharia law and live in a no-go zone, you know, where police can't go in, or now we have Sharia police in Dearborn, Michigan. We have police that police Sharia law. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're not becoming America anymore by doing that. We have laws in this country. We have customs. And if people cannot assimilate, in other words, follow our laws, follow our customs, they can still embrace some of their customs as well. But it needs to be a mixture. And America's laws need to come first.
See, a lot of these cultures, they want to get out of their countries, whether it be a horrific country like a Venezuela or another bad country in the Middle East or whatever. You know, I remember growing up as a young boy, where there used to be communities of like Portuguese or communities of Spanish, and they would kind of be in their communities, and you would know that those streets or that area of like Chinatown, like the Chinese, they have Chinatown there. You know, they create these little ethnic cultural groups within the larger community, and they embrace their ethnic backgrounds and things like that. And that's kind of what America became. It was all these, that's the melting pot. And I think a lot of the time, quite frankly, even back then, I think a lot of those cultures didn't assimilate either to the way that I thought they should. I mean, I didn't see that. And then they would think, well, but they left their countries to come to what they thought was our brand of freedom, America, our freedom. And you see, they want to bring their culture to them because they're still Portuguese, or they're still, Arabic, or they're still German, or they're still Chinese, or they're still whatever. So I think my eyes are open a little bit now when we talk about our experiment. I'm not sure if our experiment can make the test of time based on this assimilation argument we're having, Ava.
I think it could if we had more of an Ellis Island approach. You know, Ellis Island, even though it sounded very rudimentary, it was actually a very good system of sorting people out. I mean, not everybody can be let in that door. That's what we have to understand. It's not being mean, it's protecting our country.
But that's another principal point that nobody agrees on, Ava, because there are two different views of what an immigrant is. There are those who look in this that say that, you know, we're supposed to take people that are in need, the lowest possible denominator, folks that need a home because of the statue and the image of what America is, that what the tired masses, isn't it the tired masses we call it, Ava, right? It's the tired masses and the... Right.
Yes. I mean, yeah, that's I understand. Yes, I understand. That's a lovely poem on the Statue of Liberty.
Right, but that's the argument.
You know, in the beginning, we had a country that needed many people. We had vast undeveloped areas in the West, and you know, in the middle of the country. So, as a very young country, America needed all these people to come in and help, you know, build a country. But now we have a country, and it's very, very well run. It's very great. But the thing is, we can't just leave the back door open and let everyone come in. That will destroy what we have.
Well, we're seeing that now. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. But it's an argument we're having in political circles that we, because there's this argument about what's best for the country. It's a philosophical difference in the way we do business. There are the Nancy Pelosi's and that whole group who believe that America is supposed to take in the huddled masses and is supposed to help all those people out. That was the vision that they see of America. But there's still something about this assimilation that is concerning to me in the experiment here. Baruch, let me have you speak to this a moment here from what Ava is saying right now, because I think you might be able to shine some light on it. I think the experiment of America was, again, the fact, as Ava says, we're going to assimilate. And that was the concept. But again, I seen as a little boy, there were groups of people who never assimilated to the way that I thought they should have. And they weren't doing that in America. But again, a lot of these people, these countrymen left their countries because they couldn't do it back there. And they seen America as their last hope for whatever they wanted. But they want to bring their ethnic background with them. They're, you know, all of the things that they, because if you're a Portuguese or you're a German or you're Arabic, whatever it is, you want that culture. You love that culture. It's who you are. And we've kind of invited this trouble in, Baruch. I kind of don't feel sorry for, I think this is a real flaw in our experiment, I'm saying. Would you address that, please?
How much the concept of freedom, the concept of non-compliance, if you like, with every government edict, how can it be absorbed by this population that is coming? To what degree it is open to those, to this American idea of, you know, the government is necessary, but it's kind of like fire, you know, it's a necessary evil that if you let it out of its, you know, little box, it can consume us all. How are these populations open to that idea? That's one. And the other one is, how is that idea taught in the American institutions, in the, you know, at the workplace, in the university, in the elementary school, in the middle high, in the junior high, in high school, and you know, and in ballpark, and therein lies a problem, because there's a couple different problems. One is that most of these people who come to America, whether they are top level engineers from India, whom by the way I hired many of them for my own engineering company in Boston and for the companies that I worked for over the years in engineering. So you have very high level people who have no concept of freedom whatsoever. So in other words, you could have a PhD from India or from China who is no more inclined towards freedom than a strawberry picker from Honduras. And that's important to understand. But the other part of it is that our government institutions, and I mean all of them, were taken over by the globalists. And so what they teach is not freedom, but slavery, to put it to the extreme. In other words, if you go to school in America, to public school, from K to 12, and then it's from undergrad through professional schools, through graduate schools, through PhD, pro-government, pro-globalist propaganda. And on the flip side of that, you're being taught to hate, I mean, absolutely hate the early American, you know, the founding fathers of America, because they were, to use that word, racist. They took land that was not theirs. They took it by force. They engaged in legitimate genocide against the native population, and so on and so on. None of that is true, but that is what is being taught in schools, again, from the earliest age and all the way through PhD. And so, just to complete this thought, I would say that, you know, from all the kind of possible immigrant groups that can come and are coming into America, the only one that is truly incorrigible, to tie it back to our previous discussion, are Muslims. Because Muslims are almost genetically incapable of not submitting. The concept of not submission for a Muslim is apostasy. In other words, the only way that a Muslim cannot submit is to stop being a Muslim. So if it were up to me, I mean, Trump had the right idea. You cannot bring Muslims into this country. That is absolute suicide. If you want to bring everybody else, whether it's to pick strawberries or to work at Google, that's fine. But what you need to do is you need to take the first order of business is to take the American institutions back from the globalists. And that means war, because they're not gonna let them go freely.
Wow. There's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack there. And the education system is one of the big things that Baruch just talks about. I mean, it's been hijacked a long time ago. But I think where he opens my eyes up is he's saying, well, but they're run by a lot of the globalists who have a different agenda. You know, we've been having this conversation recently about the Chinese in our universities, and it's the same sort of thing. Where it's another, well, it's another evil force that we're fighting here. But and then the stealing of, you know, trade secrets and our technology and all of that is sent back to China. And you know, you get a vision of the world right now in your mind, and you think about all the stuff we've been wrestling with China in recent weeks here, right? And then you hear what Baruch says, but, you know, he says, listen, we can get just about any other group to assimilate or not to murder us in the process. Well, the punishment for being an apostate is murder. I mean, they murder you. That's what they do. They murder you. You're done. Evil comes in all forms, I guess. It doesn't compute with being in Islam. There is, again, what was it said earlier about the fact that I will not comply, right? It doesn't compute. Submission. That's the whole concept behind Islam, is submission. And here yet, that is so anti-American, it doesn't even fit into anything close to this narrative here. We will not submit here. We will not comply. And that's the whole concept. And I love the reference of that, because it just brings it back to what this experiment was all about. Well, I think what I'm wondering now is, how do we solve some of this? Because I have to tell you truthfully, the truth be told, as I listen to Baruch and I listen to IQ and I listen to Ava here, I'm thinking we're in a heap of trouble. You start to do the math here. And I've done some math as I've been listening to everybody talk, and it's not a good equation. It gets me very unsettled to think of what's going to be ahead here. What is going to happen 50 years from now? It's not going to be the same. I can feel and sense it coming. It's not going to be the same America. I can tell you that. It's not going to be the same world anymore. I think the world was at a very risky place and a very risky point. Let's take that next big chapter on right there as we continue on with our two-part series here. Is the American melting pot coming to an end? Have some hard answers for that question. Be back with our discussion in just a moment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
If we've lost the education system, and Brooke, you were talking about this earlier, if we've lost it, and I think everybody has that sense, because they're taught from pre-K all the way through to PhD, as you say, that a certain structural global belief system, and that's been building for a lot of years, decades now in the makings. You're saying you have to take it back. It's going to be painful. There's going to be a war. I mean, because you can't get the job done here if you don't take it back to the education system. So let's talk about how we make that happen. Yes. How, Baruch, I don't see an easy answer. I mean, we're talking about this big problem. We're in a difficult position. So that war that you talked about with education, how does that happen?
Yeah, that's a very tricky one, because if you think about the previous American Civil War, it was kind of divided by geography, right? You had that Mason-Dixon line, and the topic of contention was also, you know, this one topic outside of what to do with African Americans and that whole peculiar institution and slavery and all of that. There was not that much that Southerners and Yankees really were in disagreement about beyond that point. And yet there was a horrible civil war, which was one of the, if not the bloodiest conflict of that time or up until that time in the entire world. Well, today, there's no Mason-Dixon line in geography. There is a kind of a Mason-Dixon line in every American's brain or mind, I think, because on one side of that line, there is this idea of independence, of certain bloody-mindedness, even you could say, of non-compliance, you know, of that hairdresser who said, you know what, I have a God-given right to pursue happiness, and happiness for me is to keep my hair salon open so I can feed my family. So you know what? Whatever little ordinance you can create, that doesn't matter to me, because that's unconstitutional, because the Constitution guarantees me this right. I mean, from the Creator, the Constitution just elocutes that right, you know, writes it down, but it's a right that's given to me by the Creator. And so, you know what? I'm gonna open my doors to my business and start making some money. Well, that's on one side of that line, but on the other side of that line, you have all these so-called Karens. You know, you have people who call the cops when they see their neighbor, you know, lifting weights in his own driveway.
Right. Well, they've been trained that way. They've been brainwashed that way, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? They're indoctrinated in that government submission theory, right?
Exactly.
So it's going to be a big challenge.
That's it right there. You just said it. There are those people. But then, Baruch, you have a lot of the local leaders, a lot of these local governors and mayors and municipalities, county commissioners, that sort of thing. They believe they're doing things for the greater good, you see? And then it becomes a power grab. It's a power grab. And then you've got the people like the... As an icon, as a metaphor, we're using that woman out of Texas you're talking about with the salon. And quite frankly, there's a lot of those rising throughout the land here now as people are going against this, lawsuits flying and all kinds of stuff, because the pandemic is a perfect thing to model what a socialist environment would be like, Brooke, you know? It's a perfect situation. Yeah. It's a perfect storm, I'm saying. That's what we're dealing with here now. This education piece you throw out there really got me thinking, Brooke. Because I'm not seeing how we get the job done. IQ, I want to throw you the difficult question. How do we take education back? Because if you agree with the fact that everybody's being brainwashed, and you talk about that all the time, so I know you agree with that. And you know, there are so many different examples of it. How do we take that back successfully here in America?
By re-electing Donald Trump. Otherwise, you will never make it. You can't do it in a short period of time. It took them 60 years of underhand, beneath the radar, to take over the whole education system.
That's it.
Dr. Baruch is perfectly correct. From childhood now, from kindergarten, literally, to PhD. You can't do it short period of time. But in a short period of time, you must not allow a single Muslim to become American citizen under any circumstances. That's in the shorter time.
So as far as the long-term plan with the education system, and I think, Ava, what do you see? I mean, you know, there's no answer here. I mean, listen, I listen to Baruch. There's no easy answer to the education system. You live here. What do you say about that?
Well, who is the child's first teacher?
Yeah, mom and dad.
That would be mom and dad. That would be parents. And this is the most important part of this equation, okay? Parents need to rise up and demand that their children be taught proper history of America. Parents have a great deal of influence. We're taxpayers. We built these schools. We go there and enjoy, you know, things with our children. We need to push, and not just push right now with what we have. We need to push the birth rate back up to where it should be in this country. And the U.S. birth rate fell again in 2018 to 3,788,000 some odd births, representing a 2% drop from 2017. Wow. It's the lowest number of births in 32 years, according to a new federal report. The numbers also sank in the U.S. fertility rate to a record low. Not since 1986 has the U.S. seen so few babies born. And now I'm going to tell you why that's happening. That's happening because women are delaying marriage to age 27. And what's happening there is our fertility rate is dropping dramatically. So this is feminism 101. I'm going to tell you how to destroy a country. It's called feminism, okay? You don't have any feeling at all for human life, for the value of human life. You don't care at all about marriage. All you care about is yourself and getting a job. That's it.
Well, the whole generation, there's no doubt about it, Ava, the entire generation is very self-serving. I mean, all these generations. In fact, I see it with, you know, my teenagers myself. There's this, and who's responsible for that? Aren't we as parents? We did it, right? The whole culture did it.
Well, I think parents need to teach their children. I know for me, my mother was my first teacher, she read me the Bible, and she explained the Bible while she read it. So it was not just reading something, you know, obscure.
But wait a minute. But the kids expect now. That, see, but you say teach it. That's an easy, you know, statement, but it doesn't compute to me because the kids, there's a society right now in a generation, they are very expectant. They, like, for instance, the entire class, they all have an iPhone. Well, your kids have got to have an iPhone. They've all got this. They've got to have that. There's this entitlement. Entitlement is what we call it. That's a real problem out here right now.
Well, I grew up in a working class family, okay? We did not have a lot. And there were things, as I got into junior high school, I saw girls that had really nice clothing or they had this or that. And I would complain to my father, and you know what he'd say to me? Get a babysitting job, earn the money, and buy it for yourself.
Right.
I was taught to be a capitalist from age one. I mean, you know, it's all about the parents, though. You've got to understand.
It is about the parents.
It's all about how you're raised.
But, Baruch, this whole entitlement thing with the kids, I mean, do you see where I think the vast majority, there are exceptions always to the rule, but the vast majority, there is this entitlement. And this generation believes they, and I'm not just saying that to be a smart guy here. I mean, I see it all around me. It's everywhere. Don't you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. But there's an interesting point about that as well. And that is that, you know, what Ava is talking about absolutely correctly, the real answer to the problem, you know, in most kind of profound sense, the only solution is going back to God and going back to tradition. If we do that, we have won the war. So that's the goal. But the means, you know, how we get there, I think a lot of it has to do with technology. And, you know, the thing is that with this information technology that we are so awash with, so far it has been used really to our detriment. It was used to brainwash us, to spy on us, to make us more envious of other people's possessions, especially our children. You know, who has the newest iPhone and all of that kind of stuff. And that exacerbated, you know, this natural human, you know, emotion to want more, which is a good one. It's a good drive. That's what drives capitalism. But if you, like everything else, it has to be in balance. It has to be in check. But I want to make this point. As technology becomes more and more accessible and much less expensive, it can be used for good. And a good example of that is homeschooling. Mm-hmm. You know, so for example, you know, and that's, by the way, is coming, you know, it's beginning to be quite a thing during this confinement, pandemic, whatever, because the thing is that, you know, it's one thing before we had all this technology to say, you know what, I actually have to open a book and teach my, you know, my son and daughter. And that's very difficult to do because often you don't know the material yourself as a parent, especially later in this, you know, in their development. And also, you have to be exceedingly structured. You have to be a good teacher. You have to schedule things. You have to have the time for it. Mm-hmm. But now with technology, there are so many resources available for free or for next to free that all you need to do is you need to make a significantly smaller effort to get your kids into that direction. And the technology exists and it can deliver not only the quote-unquote bad messages of submission. It can also be used just as well to deliver messages of hope, messages of tradition, of God, of resistance, of non-compliance, and of freedom. And homeschooling is a big part of it. And I think that that's where there is a glimmer of hope in terms of turning around this younger generation.
God, I really like what you say there, I'll tell you. I love the way you preface that and talk about using the technology for good. There has been a sea change of the way people think right now, including what you were just talking about, Baruch, in regards to the pandemic. A lot of people's eyes have been opened now because of the homeschool and the education that's going on there. And this whole shift of confinement and the edicts that are being distributed from local governments. And so the eyes have been opened up for people, I think, is what I suggest to you. So in a very odd sort of way, the fruits of this pandemic, there will be some good to probably come out of it. And you know, Baruch, I'm talking about the lessons of life, you know, right? There are some real lessons to come out of this pandemic. And sometimes you have to go through a hardship to get to the other side to have your eyes open, brother. You know that, you know, and
That maybe that's what's happened here. Yeah, maybe that's the good. All right, I like the family, the God, bring it back to the basics that you're talking about, the education. So let's do this. Let's go right around the room here now. And IQ, I'd like to start with you. I mean, let's just take 2050, the landmark IQ of 2050. We're 30 years off from that right now. As we look back from 2050, what I question is, did we get it right? What changes did we make? And then let's talk about today, as I say, how do we fix the problem? How do we get people on the same sheet of music? IQ, what's your answer to society now for these next 30 years, between now and 2050? What do we do?
First of all, I agree completely with Eva, which I have done it on many radio talk shows, that the education of the child starts with the parents. Because the building brick of a nation is the family. And when the family is corrupt, the whole nation is corrupt. So the education should be taken over by the family. And if the education in the school and the higher schools and the universities, they pay $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to keep the child, the parents should go and change it because they pay the money. Eva is 100% correct. The future, if you're telling me, look back when in 2050, there will be no future in 2050 to look back. You won't have any. Definitely, the melting pot is increasing. And Eva, the statistics are correct. The white race will be a minority. That's not a bad thing. It's not a catastrophe. It's not a good thing, but it's not a catastrophe. What will be a catastrophe if Islam takes over, not everybody else. That's my end.
Baruch, what's your message to the world right now, buddy? Next 30 years.
I'm pretty hopeful about America, and because of that, I'm pretty hopeful for the world. It is true. I mean, it is true that sometimes history takes a bad turn, and for quite a while, you know, sometimes for decades, sometimes for centuries. You know, lights go out. The light of freedom subdued, and there is more darkness. And honestly speaking, it's a good idea for every American to kind of think about how to prepare for that just in case. And I think that the worst is not yet upon us. I think that things are going to become dicier in the more near future. But at the same time, I think that when you look at the 330 million people or so that live in America, I think that a sufficiently large number of them, probably a majority, even though not a very large majority, are still really good to the founding principles of America. And I think that that warrior spirit of old still does reside in them. In other words, that, you know, spirit of the Alamo, and of Sam Houston, who avenged the Alamo, is still found in many, many Americans. It's maybe a little dormant, and they don't know exactly kind of what to do with it. But as they are become more and more threatened and more stressed, that resiliency, that bloody-mindedness will come back to the fore. And that's what's going to save us. So I'm far from, you know, at this point, I'm far from saying that that it's all gloom and doom. Mm-hmm. Though I think that in the near future, things are going to be a little rough.
But what you're doing is reminding us all right now that in the short term, there are some real battles ahead. And now, when you say the short term here, are you in your mind, are you talking the next 5 to 10 years? You talking the next 2 to 3? What are you talking?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about, for example, the next 2 to 3 presidential terms. So I guess the next,
10 years,
8-12 years. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, like you said, President Trump does get reelected, because if not, we're going to have those bad times more and sooner. But then who is after Trump? You know, there is very few people out there, even in the Republican Party and so on, who really had a gut feeling that he has, with all his faults, and there are many, in my opinion, but they're all overridden by the real grasp that he has from his stomach about what America is all about. And honestly speaking, I have a hard time seeing who else is out there that has, on one hand, this same kind of grasp of what America is all about. And this is the other part that's so good about Trump, is his incorruptibility. I mean, the guy is clean and he's not prone to being bribed. And that's a very big thing, because most of our politicians, most American and Canadian and European politicians, now belong to China. They're literally the employees of the Chinese Communist Party. So, and that's a big problem. And that's, you know, so that's why in the short term, in that 10-year term, I find it hard to find too many bright spots.
Really well said, and should make all of us think here. Ava, so again, between now and 2050, we hear Baruch's closing comments, IQs. Tell us what you see just ahead here.
There's a secret recipe and to raise children. And I always call it the three-legged stool, okay? The family, the school, and the church. Those are the three things that a child is most exposed to. And you want to have all three of those things be all on the same page, not arguing against one another. You want them to be teaching the same rules and the same, you know, education. The second thing I want to tell you, in order for America to even continue to thrive, women need to stop buying this feminist lie that not having children will be a great, fulfilling life, because it's not. And I have girlfriends who are feminists, and they're very depressed that they never had children. So the other thing I want to say is we must modify our immigration program in America so that we only take people who can assimilate with our country and our rules and regulations, our laws, all of our customs, and they also need to be able to speak English. That's very important.
All right, friends. Well, I'll tell you, I learned a lot here. I hope you did as well here. Much of it very un-PC, but that's what you have to do when you're going to solve the big problems. And Trump is funny because he's the guy that came along that slammed the door, and which really pissed off all the globalists, upset them to no end. He slammed the door. Oh, and then they started, you racist bastard, you xenophobe, you POS, you're this, you womanizer. I mean, they every name in the book they could possibly get. To ridicule the man. Whereas the man was just really a megaphone for the rest of us. He was just really the voice of reason that we felt. And as Baruch was saying, it's not that like he was some model citizen that said everything properly or that wasn't without his faults. But who among us is without faults? Who among us? I tell you all the time out there, tell me about your faults. Maybe we could talk about your skeletons in your closet someday and see how that looks maybe to mankind. I love those shallow people who always point out the faults of others, and they are shallow for sure. And the world is full of them. A lot of them find their home on social media, unfortunately, but they're everywhere in life. I also like using the technology for good, and how can we do that? And taking back the education. And parents, being parents and our children and being involved in the various things that are important that we need to be involved in. I mean, how do we wake people up? How do we move the ball forward? How do we preserve the generations? A lot of things, again, come to my mind as we now lead forward to what's going to happen next. You know, what's going to happen next? And I feel a purpose here. I feel a tremendous purpose to what we do here at America Out Loud. I hear what IQ said about what the importance of America to the world. And we should never forget what Edmund Burke said. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And I think that's what each of us have to ask ourselves, which camp we fall in, the good camp or the evil camp. It's time to get involved and get loud.